Joe Donnelly passes up the Democratic National Convention, why he saw no benefit in a trip to Charlotte. John Gregg's new negative ad, Rupert talks issues, and Purdue spends $380,000 in preparation for Mitch Daniels. That plus Andre Carson answers the DNC roll call for Indiana and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 7, 2012.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Democrats held their national convention in Charlotte, and at least one high-profile Indiana Democrat, Senate candidate Joe Donnelly, didn't go. Joe Donnelly took a tour of the facilities at Ivy Tech in Indianapolis instead of going to Charlotte.
I've got better things to do than go down there. I've got a chance to be here in Indiana.
Never mind that there are fundraising opportunities at the Democratic National Convention, as well as the chance to build enthusiasm among Indiana delegates. Donnelly is already facing attack ads that tie him to Barack Obama and criticism from the campaign of Richard Murdoch, no matter what he does.
When you have a 75 to 80% voting record in support of President Obama, as Joe Donnelly does, you want to be as far away from Charlotte this week as you can be.
Donnelly won't admit to that, but he is also reluctant to embrace the president. Barack Obama faces a double-digit deficit to Mitt Romney in Indiana, and common sense tells you that a candidate in a dead heat is better off on his own.
You know, if Richard Murdoch wants to run against Barack Obama, he ought to run for president. I'm running for senator for the state of Indiana so we can create jobs here, create opportunity here, and that's what this election's about.
Plus, there are more Indiana voters here. Will Barack Obama drag down Indiana Democrats? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Schella. Eric Holcomb, can Richard Murdoch criticize Joe Donnelly on this? He didn't go to Tampa.
Well, he was just prior with Mitt Romney down in Evansville, so he's proud to be with our nominee. He's in a TV commercial right now. Obviously, Joe Donnelly does not want to be seen in the same picture with the president. Joe Donnelly says, I'm not running for president, but he is running to support the president's agenda and has already proven that, and that's proven to be unpopular this year.
The hidden message here is that Joe Donnelly wants to create some distance between himself and the president, right?
Joe Donnelly's, you know, we've been talking about this now for how many years? Joe Donnelly's always been his own man, okay? He makes the decisions based on what he thinks are better for Hoosier voters. He is not like Richard Murdoch, who maybe he didn't go to Tampa, maybe because they tapped down the Tea Party in Tampa, but he's been to every Tea Party rally he can go to, debating such learned things as, the gold standard, going back to the gold standard, direct election of senators, no health care for women, birth control, all the pressing issues of the Tea Party. He is a charter member of that, and I don't think that particular convention of the Republicans was right-wing enough for Murdoch.
All right. So while everybody else on the Democratic side, Ann included, was in Charlotte this week, there have been some developments in that race, including ads that call Donnelly a liberal from an independent group, and now there's an independent group calling Murdoch a radical. It's getting rough.
And it's going to get rougher, unfortunately, because, as you noted, those attack ads are coming from outside the campaigns, and it's easy to throw mud and throw all kinds of charges when you don't have to answer to anybody or anything. So voters are going to have to try to discern what is fact and what is fiction, and both sides are going to be guilty of exaggerating facts about the other side. So I just say, if anybody's interested in the race, and I hope all Hoosiers are, they do their own research and just tune out all of the stuff that they might see or hear on television or radio.
Okay, and with regard to ties to the presidential campaigns, right, there's word today that Paul Ryan's coming back to Indianapolis later this month.
For a fundraiser.
A fundraiser. Probably not. We talked about this a few weeks ago, why candidates are willing to come in and take dollars out of the coffers, but not necessarily spend time with a lot of public events. So that seems to be the theme. I think both sides have, I know I'll get adamant denials here, but it seems that both sides have already concluded how Indiana's going to show up on after the polls close on November 6th. But I don't think it's surprising that Joe Donnelly wouldn't go down there. He was not alone. You had Democratic senators like Claire McCaskill, who's in a tight race in Missouri, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, John Tester in Montana. They all stayed back in their respective states, too. So I think that was not a unique strategy. And you could argue, I suppose, Joe Donnelly sent his wife down, so there was some representation. Right. Had he gone, I think, I'm reminded of a conversation we had a few weeks ago with the, what's the term we're using when you follow people around, the, not the trackers, but the we're at the cameras looking for missteps
trackers.
I mean, this would have been a recipe for a tracker. I'm sure wherever he went, whether it was any kind of fundraiser, whether it was any kind of gala with, you know, any kind of celebrity, I'm sure there wouldn't have been a picture of Will.i.am. You know, here, while instead of worrying about Hoosier voters and Hoosier jobs, he's celebrating with the Black Eyed Peas or whatever. I'm sure that would have been the case.
There's something to that.
But you still have Murdoch worrying about losing jobs.
John Gregg did go to Charlotte.
Yes, he did go to Charlotte.
But only for a part of it, right?
Yeah, he only went for a day, basically. But he did make an appearance for a Democratic Governors Association event. But, you know, when you get somebody
so
like...
So he got some money out of the deal.
I'm not at liberty to say.
I think that's the safe
assumption. So the point on this, it seems to me, is that Murdoch is so far right. You're going to see all those ads. You're going to see the stuff where he'd rather have Detroit go bankrupt than not protect the 100,000 Hoosier jobs.
Well,
all of that's out there, and that's fact. But when you bring Ryan here, Ryan wouldn't know a fact if it came up and hit him in the face. And anybody who doesn't know whether he ran a sub-3 marathon or a higher-than-4-hour marathon, you know, doesn't know the truth from fiction.
This election is going to come down to the economy and jobs. And the last thing Joe Donnelly wants to talk about is Obamacare and the adverse impact it's going to have on the economy and jobs. It's killing jobs in Indiana right now.
It's not killing jobs. We know that. If
Joe Donnelly could have designed the message or the theme, it would have been what he ordered up. He didn't have to go because so many speakers talked about the auto bailouts and the jobs that would have been lost. And that's been a part of his mantra on the campaign trail that of course, Richard Murdoch
opposed
the bailout. So, I mean, the message was delivered without him having to be there and risk being photographed with people who could be a drag on the ticket.
He sued on that when Joe Donnelly and Richard Lugar worked together on that auto loan program.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, did the Democratic National Convention make it more likely that you will vote Democrat? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, and C, I didn't watch. Last week's question was, did the GOP National Convention make it more likely that you would vote Republican? 57% said yes, 37% said no, 6% said I didn't watch. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Democrat John Gregg attacks the voting record of Republican Mike Pence in the latest TV ad in the race for governor. In the ad, Gregg returns to Sanborn, Indiana, his hometown, where this time he highlights the work of a local minister.
Doing youth ministry, practicing with the praise band. He gets paid next to nothing. And then there's Mike Pence. Mike makes $174,000 a year, but missed 86% of his committee votes and hadn't passed a single bill. Loafers at the Blue Jay wish they had Mike's job.
I like his last ad. What we've got is John Gregg's personality wrapped around a political attack here.
And it's above Delaney, the belt.
And he's on camera delivering it. You got to give him points for that. But does he at some point here need to give voters a reason to vote for him?
Oh, he'll do that. But you also have to have an accurate picture of Mike Pence. I mean, they've wrapped him in such sheep clothing that you don't know that his hidden agenda is all the Tea Party agenda. And I think this is absolutely fair. Mike Pence is never going to get any awards for working hard when he was in Congress. He's never even passed a bill. And missing 86% of the votes in his committees is a pretty terrible record. And he needs to stand on that record, don't you think?
Well, that statistic has been floated previously by the Gregg campaign, and the Pence campaign has not disputed it. Their response is that he made over 90% of the floor votes.
Yeah, he's got a 95% floor voting record. And, I mean, if we wanted to talk about or revisit some old Schoolhouse Rock videos and how a bill becomes a law, he's been co-sponsored on a lot of bills that started out and attached that language into bills that passed. So, and if you want to talk to Hoosier employers that know how much of a leader Mike Pence has been throughout the years, the reason why John Gregg's down double digits still is because they don't know why he's running. The only thing they know is he has two first names, he's burned that message, and he's talking about social issues. I'd be happy to buy John Gregg a breaded tenderloin if he can go 2 days
issues?
Without talking about social
why
issues.
Why wouldn't you talk about it? That's what Mike Pence
he's the
Pence
only
has
one
been,
talking about.
Oh,
John
Mike
Gregg.
Pence, Mike Pence doesn't want to talk about it.
John
because
Gregg
for his
is the
12
only
years of
one
Congress,
talking
12
about
years
issues.
In Congress, that's John, been his agenda.
There's actually a reference in this one when he talks about the loafers at the Blue Jay. He's talking about the first ad he did. You've got a series here that he's pulling together. I mean, it's interesting storytelling. Is it effective politics?
It's a departure from what we've typically seen. It's probably you can define it as a negative ad or a comparative. I guess we'll argue about which term to use, but it's probably the most upbeat, happy, smile-inducing negative or comparative spot you would have. And I think we've seen so much of the, you know, where you have people morphing from, you know, the candidate's face into the devil or whoever is perceived to be the devil, and you have the these ominous sounds and. You know, everything's kind of black and white.
This is Richard Murdoch's campaign.
This is refreshing, and I think it's getting some attention because of that. One other point, which I don't know if it was intentional or not, you talk about the social issues, is the religious theme here. You know, it's one thing. This is the week when Democrats nationally were having to explain why God had been removed, the reference from the platform. Here you have, it seems to me, a very effective message that's so subtle, where you can have a church scene across, talk about his Christian church, and send a very strong message that, you know, this is not the secular anti-religion party.
He's multitasking.
Without having to say it.
Yeah, he's multitasking in this ad. Wouldn't you say? He's trying to build his name ID. He's trying to attack Mike Pence. He's trying to tell people a little about what he's about.
He's multitasking. I think it's a great ad. Look, I think that the arc that John has tried to create it is effective storytelling. John's biggest problem is he doesn't have the money to buy the points to make it as effective as it possibly can. And so, you know, you get all the messages, you get the shot at the candidate, you get the more subtle messages. It's nice not to be hit over the head. And you can see what's behind the man, but he just does not have the ability to make that effective statewide.
The Tea Party is going to finance Mike Pence. That was a given.
That doesn't help John's attempts to get on the air.
He is the Tea Party darling. He'll have all the money he needs.
He's not running to get elected Indiana storyteller. No one knows why he's running, and that's why he's down double digits.
He needs to offer something. Rupert Bonham, the Libertarian candidate for governor, came out in favor of same-sex marriage this week. Rupert appeared as a guest on Wish TV's Indy Style, along with his campaign manager, Evan McMahon, who prepared ramen noodles. Rupert said that's what fuels his campaign, along with pizza. Rupert made it clear that that running for governor is a bigger challenge than he expected before he talked with me about issues following the show.
I had no idea what I was actually proposing when I said to the Libertarians, I want to be our next governor, and they said, well, that sounds great.
I am the first candidate to stand up and say we should have equal rights for everyone. In our marriage equality, we should let any two people get married.
John Katzenberger, is he ready for prime time?
Well, don't forget, Jim, that he won $1 million on prime time. So you might say that, yeah, he's ready for prime time.
In this role.
Okay, now that you qualified that, I'll say that it appears he's out of his depth. But his campaign was the one who had probably the most well-reasoned response to Governor Daniels' request for whether or not to be part of the federal Medicaid program. You know, I think that they're giving it a good shot, and they're going after it. And, you know, whether or not he comes across as smooth or is ready for prime time, they're making a good effort.
Okay. Well, we did an 8-minute interview with him. The Strictly Issues, you can find it at wishtv.com if you'd like. But among the other stances he took, he said that we should repeal the automatic taxpayer refund and there should be more state spending. Those don't even sound like libertarian positions.
I think you're probably right about that. unlike the marriage issue, which I presume would be part of, I haven't read the Libertarian platform this cycle, but I presume that would be pretty typical. You get into these other issues where there's a suggestion that maybe government does serve a purpose and therefore needs to keep some of the money it has rather than giving it back to taxpayers. Yeah, you're right, Jim. It's probably not as expected as you would have. But it, the whole thing, I mean, the packaging, the presentation on this particular show, we just talked about how unusual John Gregg's campaign and spots were. This is right up there, too, in terms of the tie-dye and the ramen noodles. And, I mean,
well, he's clearly got some branding that's effective, yet in the polling we've seen so far, he doesn't do any better than a generic libertarian. How do you explain that?
If I recall correctly, I think at the outset of the campaign, it was almost universal that folks thought he had a very charitable heart, he was a good person, and it just sounds like to me, you know, 60 days before an election or 70 when you did the interview, he's having second thoughts. He's probably wondering, why didn't I talk to more people before I jumped in head first?
It is a lot of work, no question.
Mm-hmm. Will he be a factor?
No.
Moving on, Mitch Daniels is unhappy about some of the preparations being made as he gets ready to become the president of Purdue University. Purdue spent $380,000 to make improvements in the president's suite with upgrades that include computer systems and the addition of video conferencing equipment. Daniels wants everybody to know that he doesn't approve. He issued a statement through the governor's office saying, "I knew nothing about it and was no part of the decision to perform the work. If I had been asked in advance, I would have requested that the work not be done." Purdue officials say the work was done now because the office is vacant for 6 months while the governor fills out his term at the State House. John Schwanes, what were they thinking?
Well, I don't think they may have been, is the short answer. If you're Mitch Daniels and you've prided yourself on frugality and clearly there's a sensitivity to budget cuts as it relates to higher ed.
Go ahead and get some new carpet for $380,000.
Well, they were carpet tiles, so yeah. Those are probably cheaper than the whole, you know, wall-to-wall spools. But if you're Mitch Daniels, this is not the first headline you want during this kind of six-month build-up to your tenure. I think you'd much prefer something like President Gora did when she arrived at Ball State, where instead of having the I don't know what it's called, the inauguration, the crowning, whatever one calls it, spent that money on scholarships. And I think that got her off on a high note. I'm sure that, and I'm not saying that he can't get back on that footing before January when he takes office. I would not be surprised. I don't know the legalities of here. This came out of the repair and rehab fund of the university. Right. Just a crazy guess. If it's legal, I don't know the mechanics here, but maybe some donor would step up and say, "I'm going to pay for that, so we're back to that money can be, and maybe it will go into scholarship." That's my crazy guess. Let's see which well-heeled donor.
Well, certainly it doesn't make any sense to try to undo it and add more expense to things at this point.
Well, and that could be the worst thing, is to try to add more expense to undo it. Look, it's a case of the culture clash that everyone has anticipated, and this is really kind of the initial skirmish. I'm sure that the folks at Purdue looked at all of the situation, and they said, "Well, it's $380,000, but we got this six-month window. We'll get it fixed up, bring it up to date, and then when the new president comes in, everything will be hunky-dory." Well, they didn't think about it in terms that Mitch Daniels typically thinks of things, and as soon as he heard about it, we saw the results. So it's going to take a while for the folks at Purdue to get used to the Mitch Daniels style. There's no question about that.
Well, and apparently he read about it in the paper. It strikes me there's a communication problem here, too.
Well, I mean, he isn't the president yet, so I mean, they're kind of between a rock and a hard place too. And after all, they gave him the opportunity to get a great headline out of it. So you know, it doesn't seem to me he's going to get the upgrade and the headline.
So you're saying it ends up being a plus for him?
Well, it's hard for me to understand how the board that he picked, that he handpicked, who handpicked him, can't pick up the phone and say, "Hey, we've got this idea. What do you think?" Yeah, okay.
That's what I'm
telling you. Donor's going to come across here.
No one should be surprised. Anyone that knows Mitch should not be surprised that he would react this way to unnecessary expenses. And to the great folks up at Purdue, they better get used to recycled staples and using both sides of those little yellow memo pad stickies.
This is his opportunity to send a message in a more effective way than he might otherwise have been able to.
I think the message was received.
Yeah, all right. Now, if you're on Indiana's Do Not Call list but still getting calls from telemarketers, Greg Zeller wants to know, the Attorney General says the number of complaints for robocalls has more than doubled from last year. He says 70% of those unwanted calls come from scammers. Zeller says technology is making it easier for telemarketers to call a mass of people at once. He's looking for new ways to stop the calls.
We're losing ground on the battle against robocallers and scam artists, and we're willing to work with everybody to try to find a way to maintain and to gain back some of the protections that Hoosiers have really come to expect.
And Delaney, can the Attorney General use that issue in every campaign?
It seems the only one he has, doesn't it? I mean, he got, what was it, $40 to $50 million out of the mortgage fraud settlement, and it was supposed to deal with foreclosures in the state. What has he done with it? Has anybody seen anything that has come from that? I haven't, and I certainly haven't seen a marked decrease, in the number of foreclosures. Instead, we recycle the same issue. I guess it's something he can grasp, even though he apparently can't handle it.
Well, but I think in the meantime, everybody can grasp it. I got a robocall at home this morning.
And you don't have caller ID?
I don't.
Well, maybe the technology ought to be on your end.
Well, I have some Mitch Daniels traits.
Yeah. The only thing that I haven't seen is any opposition to his reelection. And the message that he was sending was, scammers beware, fly over Indiana, don't try it here, or we'll get you.
The coincidence that we're in the middle of campaign season, it can't be lost here, can it?
Jim!
Yeah. It worked for his predecessor.
This is probably about as perfect an issue as you can come up with for the reasons you both mentioned, which is it's easy to understand. You know, you talk about mortgage relief. My head's hurting already because it's going to be
people losing their houses
I don't doubt that.
But he could be doing something.
But this is
not
simple. It's clear cut. And the problem is worsening. And I illustrated by the question you just asked Jim about caller ID. Even if he had caller ID, it really is not a defense, and that's part of why we're seeing the spike in calls, because of so-called caller ID spoofing, where if you could show that you're Jim Shella calling Eric, he might answer your call, because in fact that's a way, if you want Eric to answer your call, routed as Jim Shella. Basically that's part of the problem.
Right.
Now you don't have that technological defense that Hoosiers had before.
I am simply waiting for one of Greg Zeller's children to knock over the milk at the dinner table.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll have come full circle.
There's a true
callback. The issue is
that exciting.
But
thank you.
You agree it's effective?
Well, absolutely it's effective for the reason that John expressed. And why not pound that home?
And he doesn't have anything else.
Well, be that as it may, Ann.
Anything else.
This is working for him.
Oh, so we shouldn't do any other parts of the job?
I'm not saying that. The question was, is it effective? And the answer is yes.
Wow.
Finally, Congressman Andre Carson answered the DNC roll call in Charlotte for Indiana Democrats. Here's a portion of his delivery.
We fought hard in 2008 to deliver Indiana as a Democratic state for the first time in 44 years. And we're determined to do it again. I am honored to announce that the great state of Indiana proudly cast all 101 votes for our president, Barack Obama.
Eric Holcomb, you have recent experience in that regard. How did he do?
He did great. It's quite an honor. You know, only one Hoosier gets to do it for the major party every 4 years. He got selected, and I thought it was 15 minutes of fame. Turns out it's about 15 seconds of fame. It's fleeting.
Actually, at the time of yours, it was 52 seconds.
Yeah, 52. You're being modest.
Okay.
I milked it.
Okay. All right. Well,
that was impressive.
There was no sentence in there.
It's like a political zip line. It's over before it starts.
Yeah. Standing next to Andre Carson there was Dr. Woody Myers, mm-hmm. who's chairman of the Indiana delegation, and he actually delivered part of the it went on much longer than what we showed. But tell me this, Indiana Democrats in Charlotte were seated way in the back. There were no Indiana speakers.
Well, there was one Indiana speaker.
Somebody from Marion who...
Right, from Bain.
Talked
one
about
of the plants closed by Mitt Romney, yeah.
But no Indiana politicians.
No Indiana politicians spoke, that's right. We weren't way in the back, though. I mean, our seats were good seats. We had a really good view of the floor. But, you know... the odds are that Indiana will go Republican this time. They're not going to go Republican by double digits, as we hear from the Republicans, but the odds are that way, and that's how the states that are seen in contention get or the states of the president and vice president get the primary position. That's the way it always is.
High-profile Hoosiers, like former national chairman Joe Andrew, I understand, was there. And
he didn't have a speaking role, which I think was what Jim
I guess that was an oversight, probably, but I'm sure was creating quite a stir with his presence.
I don't know where that came from.
Left field is not far enough away for that.
That was just for Ann's benefit.
When Eric was in Tampa, you were in Charlotte, and Indiana really played minimal roles in both, right?
Yeah, Jackie Wilarski spoke. She's running for Congress.
Right.
So we're proud of our delegation.
Wolf in sheep's clothing.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.